Today on Movie World, as we continue our coverage of Tribeca Film Festival 2018, Day 2. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, Dee as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Still in New York?
Yay. And full of dumplings.
We are watching movies, eating to our heart's content.
We did do dumplings today. Excellent dumplings, yes. On 23rd Street and 7th.
Between 7th and 8th.
And it's right across from the Chelsea Cinepolis Theater.
It is.
Which shows a lot of the Tribeca Film Festivals. It's like, not right across, but it's one block.
It's a block away, yeah.
It's a block away. And it's called Excellent Dumplings.
They are excellent.
Yes.
And I think we had this discussion last year, because we found it last year, is that they better be excellent if you're calling yourself Excellent Dumpling House.
I think that's just a ruse to get you into the place. But they do, in this case, happen to be excellent. They are the soupiest soup dumplings. Yeah. And for those who are listening who have never had Xiaolongbao, I think is the proper name of them, the Chinese soup dumplings. These ones are excellent. They are made with like a papery thin, but surprisingly strong exterior, and then they fill them with this kind of liquid dumpling
soupy goodness.
Yes,
I've got a horrible feeling it's the fat from the meat, boys.
Whatever it is,
it's so good.
Denial.
Yes, it's healthy broth.
Actually, yes, it's very good for you.
As Julia Child would say, yes, it's just broth.
It's just broth. Yeah,
low calorie. So, yes, we're still kind of on our dumpling, post-dumpling high here.
Yes.
In New York, in our makeshift studio in a New York hotel.
Yes. And there is a excellent, very, very artisanal, unusual donut place on the same line, right?
Now, I was disappointed by that last year.
Really?
They have the fanciest donuts I've ever seen, but kind of like, you know, in fact, donuts are one of those things that I think I like more than I do.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I dislike them.
But then you have a good one and you love it.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
And you're not really a cakey person, generally,
I'm
Joe,
not,
so.
And I think that's what's wrong with this dumpling place. I don't want to... donut place, that's right.
It would be a terrible thing if all you could get at the dumpling place was donuts.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends. If they were good donuts, which are very rare to find. But yeah, these are very cakey,
yeah,
fancy.
They're very fancy. And they're some of them are not even round. They're square with a hole in them. They're like a proper cake.
They're kind of masquerading as donuts in that case.
But there's all kinds, passion fruit and all kinds of stuff.
Why am I hungry again?
I don't know.
We just ate about 2 hours ago.
This is Foodie Wallers.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Well, we have a ton of movies to get through today. So
on our day two coverage.
Yes.
We've managed to somehow, between us, watch another 6 or 7 movies.
Yeah.
So why don't we get into talking about said movies and start with the first movie that we saw, which was In a Relationship.
But not about me and food.
Go ahead. Okay. Go for it, Yesti.
So starting off our day two live coverage from Chelsea, New York, Tribeca Film Festival 2018, is the movie In a Relationship, which I presume is a witty commentary on social media status, which often, you know, you can put in a relationship or not. The movie is written and directed by Sam Boyd, with cinematographer Martin Vian, and it has a pretty interesting cast. It has Emma Roberts, Michael Angarano, who's really very good, Dree Hemingway, Peter Gibson, Jay Ellis, and Melora Walters. It's a 92-minute film made in the U.S., and the brief plot outline is that long-term couple Owen and Hallie are breaking up, or maybe not. And just as the relationship reaches a turning point, Matt and Willa embark on a romance of their own, a funny and deeply felt chronicle of one summer in the lives of two couples in Los Angeles is what is presented in a relationship. Now, who saw this?
Both Rashmi and I did. Yeah. Okay.
So
This movie took a little bit of patience for me to get into, because on the face of it, we've seen it all before, right? You know, two couples, each quadrant of the movie, so to speak, each of the four main characters has different... it's an exploration of different attitudes to relationships. You know, the long-term versus short-term, the, you know, committed versus the uncommitted, that kind of thing. And I don't know, for the first 10 minutes or so, I thought, oh, this is another one of those 20-somethings doing 20-something things with 20-something type dilemmas. But I found that over the course of the movie, I grew to like it a lot more than I did at the beginning. I think the characters are all very well realized and for the most part likable. I mean, they all do, you know, they all make mistakes. I think they all make the kind of mistakes that 20-year-olds make. And so I think there's kind of a truthfulness at the core of, you know, the behavior behind each of the characters. So be patient with this one. I think, you know, overall I came out kind of satisfied with, you know, the story that was being told here, and the characters were very, very memorable, despite some of the flaws that each of them had. So I actually thought this was, you know, kind of a well-executed movie that of the kind that we've seen before.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was almost worried about this as it opened, because I was thinking, and I wrote down before the movie started, millennial, is it a millennial version of 500 Days of Summer, as the first July popped up on the screen. And I'm really happy to say that if you just let it flow over you, it's actually a really good movie that perfectly captures how relationships feel at that age in your life. And this whole push and pull around commitment. And I think the most admirable thing about this movie is that it didn't confine it to just the woman being needy, that the female part of the equation, and the biological clock, or the need to get married, or the need to settle down. They almost explored mirror images of both characters, in the male and female, in the two male and female couples.
Right.
And I really liked that. It was really fresh for something that's been done time and time and time again. This felt very fresh and effervescent.
Yeah,
is how I would describe it.
There's not a lot of originality here in terms of the setup. But I think it's done very well. It has, again, it has some very funny moments. I feel like a movie I described in yesterday's podcast, I feel like it could have done with a little bit of a pair of scissors taken to it, because I think it meandered a little bit at the beginning until it kind of found its feet and what it was actually about.
Yeah.
And then it kind of focused in narrowly on all of the characters, you know, getting really at the crux of what that particular character's journey had to be, right? What transition they needed to make.
Yeah.
And again, it feels unoriginal, but just nicely done.
It feels authentic.
I also want to talk about the performances here, because
really
I think they didn't all have necessarily the big moments and the big scenes, but they all, you know, felt very, they all inhabited the roles really well. You know, Emma Roberts, again, I think here is the standout, but she was kind of
she's the A-lister of the group, I guess.
And the core of the story that's being told. But, you know, again, just wish it had maybe not thrown in quite as many explorations, I'll use that word,
I think I know what you're referring to. Yeah. I guess it was trying to do a little bit of the kitchen sink.
But it was messy, and your 20s can be messy.
Sure.
And I think it was a good reflection of how messy relationships and feelings and life can be at that age, where you're becoming somebody. You're not quite there yet, but you're on that kind of journey to become who you're going to be. And I think the movie, you know, does a nice job of taking us through a summer with these characters.
Yeah.
And it feeling like we were there with them.
Yeah.
So for me, the gold standard for I didn't get a chance to see this movie, although it seems like I would have enjoyed it a lot. But for me, delightedly, the gold standard for this kind of a movie is the one we saw at last year's Tribeca, which is the movie Permission with Rebecca Hall and Dan Stevens. And remember,
you just did the recommendation on one of our podcasts.
But that, to me, they just did it about as good as this can be done. Although these characters seem to be slightly younger.
It is. It's a younger version of that.
Right.
It's very, very LA too. I mean, I think the world in which they inhabit just feels so, so solidly, you know, kind of like Laguna Beach slash, you know, one of those California West shows. Like, it felt like Malibu Beach, right?
That was kind
of cool. And the only other thing I have to mention here is somehow this movie makes smoking cool again. Like, these characters smoke so much. It was, I don't know, maybe did that jump out at you at all, Rashmi? Because I made a point of like, oh my God, you know, this has gone away from us in movies for good reason, but I felt a little off put. But these characters trying to be kind of...
I put it down to them being late 20s.
Edgy and young and exploration.
Well, you know. I just figured they're kind of just post-college.
Finding
their first job, still kind of shaking off that college.
It was kind of a rebellious thing. Yeah. I was just like, whoa, that's... I haven't seen that depicted in a movie for a while.
It's gone down because smoking in a movie is an automatic R rating. So, you know, if you're making a movie about teenagers and they're smoking, you get an R rating and the teenagers can't watch it, plus if they're
in a restaurant, they can't smoke if they're in California. Right. So if you're doing any scenes indoors.
Right.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Next up,
let's move along to The Bleeding Edge. Rashmi.
Okay, I have the intro for that. So this is directed by Kirby Dick, and you may remember Kirby Dick from great documentaries like The Invisible War that came out in 2012. Can you believe it? That was 6 years ago. And he also did The Hunting Ground in 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Both movies about the abuse of women in the army and then in college the campuses. Right. Yeah. So this isn't the same thing, but it's somewhat connected, I would say. So each year in the United States, unparalleled innovations in medical diagnostics, treatment, and technology hit the market. But when the same devices designed to save patients end up harming them, who's accountable? So it's really an exploration of how medical devices are not as highly regulated as new drugs. Now, given our day jobs are in this field, not in medical devices, this was one that I was absolutely excited to watch and see what Kirby Dick would bestow upon us. So who wants to go first? Yazdi, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I have a lot to say about this. So,
I saw you furiously writing.
Well, I think there's a lot of scrutiny on drugs, and rightly so, about the safety of drugs. And, you know, for decades now, people have been saying, you know, unsafe drugs are on the market and, you know, ineffective drugs are on the market and pharma's making a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. And the point of the movie is that the one area which should be within the purview of the FDA is medical devices. And they have a relatively very, very short bar to clear to bring a medical device to treatment. And I should speak about, 2 weeks ago, I was asked to use this medical device, which a little pill that you swallow, which gets attached to your intestine, and then it measures your acid in your, because I was having acid reflux. And I asked the doctor, you know, and he says, oh, don't worry about it. I've used it many times. And I just left it at that. And I never questioned my doctor about, well, how many of these have you done? And has anybody had serious bleeding after this? Has anybody been, you know, permanently damaged by this? And, you know, as people going to good doctors and good hospitals, we inherently trust that the equipment that they use is also safe. And this whole documentary kind of questions that, well, is it safe? Sometimes the doctors are too eager to trust it. The regulators may have their own agenda, and the regulators have this really again, pretty low bar for clearing a medical device. So it asks a lot of questions. And at the end of the day, for me, it all came down to anything which can cause harm. And certainly, I think devices, certainly some of the more invasive devices, can cause a lot more harm than a drug, I would think, that you swallow or ingest. I think it needs a lot of robust, thorough, detailed evaluation before it's allowed on the market. And when it doesn't happen, you start seeing these problems. And then it hits on one other issue, which I will talk about later. But what did you guys think?
Joe?
I always kind of watch these things with a little bit of a jaundiced eye, because I think you can take any topic like this and you can tell all of the horror stories, but neglect the millions and possibly billions of deployments of medical devices that are done safely. That's correct. Not to say that there isn't harm done, and this movie certainly shined a light on some cases where some true harm has been done. So I guess as a society, these movies are useful to kind of say, what questions should we be asking as patients? I think what questions should we be asking as a society about allowing these types of things to go on the market? Because unfortunately, with any kind of healthcare remedy, there is always going to be a balance of pros and cons. And documentaries like this, I think, can be a little scaremongering in order to get the message across. I think the message in behind this one is actually a good one. I do think that the points that they're making about the scrutiny and the rigor with which such devices are tested before they're marketed was definitely enlightening to me, given that we do in our day jobs work in clinical development areas. So I think we're a little bit more educated than most on what goes into such things. But I do think that documentary felt a little heavy-handed. I would have been a little happier to see some general statistics about overall safety versus these few, hopefully, edge cases, and devices that have clearly gone wrong. No system is perfect, but I think there's a lot of improvement to be made, and I think that's the overall message. So I actually enjoyed the movie very much. It was enlightening and exciting in terms of the knowledge I was getting, but also frightening and tragic for those who have been injured in these cases.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very well-made documentary, but given we spend all our time in this area, I was viewing it with a different eye. So the thing I took away was, I wish there had been more of an exploration of, is this bad doctoring or a bad device? And we didn't get any information about
cases when it goes wrong,
how many times has it gone wrong for that particular institution or that particular doctor? So that kind of cast a bit of a shadow on it for me. And I must say, I love the FDA ad, and I made the quote, "Help stamp out quackery." What a great ad that we got to see from, years gone by.
Yes, I think, early days of the FDA. Yeah.
Help stamp out quackery. True ad. Quackery. It was a true ad. I liked that it covered IUDs, hip replacements. There was a mesh incident, but I feel like what it ultimately became about most was the whole thing with this IUD for women's contraception, and my sense is that that's probably where they had the most volume of cases where they could go back and interview and follow this group along.
It was a rabbit hole down which they went to make this movie.
It was probably the thing they started with, and then they thought, well, let's add on the hip replacements and let's add on the mesh, metal, the bladder mesh. And it was frightening. And I have a titanium elbow, and I was thinking, oh my god, I was trying to think back to how I was before I had the elbow replacement.
Still just as nuts.
Yes, I'm still nuts. Thanks. Good to know. So I think having then more than a third of the movie spent in this IUD area, then I was a little bit turned off by where that kind of thread went in a way. I didn't necessarily feel like, although they showed this group of women who were advocates and They're doing a great job to try and change things, and you know, they keep going back to Congress and saying, hey Congress, you know, you need to hold the FDA accountable. And to your point that both of you have made, we didn't get to see the safety data of the whole population, and ultimately right. we all know it's a game of statistics, right? So if the benefit outweighs the risk, then everything gets to stay on the market. So I think it's a little bit incomplete. I wish we had had more of the other side. Heavy-handed is a good way to describe it.
Yeah, this is very fertile territory. I think you can talk about, there's so many issues here. And one of the issues is, you know, if a drug is extremely beneficial in causing permanent contraception in 1 million women, and in 10 others, it completely ruins their lives. Is it a valuable device to mankind? And that's, you know, we as, it's not for me to decide, it's not for you. So we as a society have to decide what is our tolerance for that risk benefit.
Right, and then, Yassi, the thing that worries me the most, sorry, which I just forgot to say now, was to me, the fact that it's contraception and there's so much debate and division around the whole topic of contraception, then that became a little bit,
I don't think the movie was going there, though.
No, I don't think it was going there, but I worried that if you're someone who's watching it, you're going to have, and you don't agree with contraception, you're going to say, well, it serves them right, because, you know.
Oh, no, I mean, no, look.
I see what you mean.
Like, yeah, than a third of the movie is in that area, so it made me uncomfortable.
Right. I mean, we deal with this with drugs all the time. You know, you have drugs with safe cancer. And every once in a while, some person who's very sensitive to it will have a really bad adverse event to it. Well, because this person had a bad adverse event to this drug, is it fair to then prevent this drug from being used by so many other people who will gain benefit from it?
Right.
And it's a very different ethically twisted question to ask.
And charged
issue, because depending on whether you're the person who's going to benefit or the person who's going to have the horrible adverse event, your answer could be completely different, and we as a society have to kind of decide that. But I did agree that the movie was a little one-sided. It was a little too quick to point fingers.
A
lot of the movie was about this woman who, there was nobody else apparently who was that she was aware of who was having this bad reaction to this insertion of this device in her, and she started this Facebook page, and then it got to 65 users who had the same problems, then it got to 6,500, then they went and talked with the Senate, and you know, the documentary kind of shows them walking, you know, all straight facing the camera, like, you know, like they're superheroes in a superhero movie. One too many times, you know, walking down the walls like that. So the movie is kind of looking up to them a little bit, and again, I don't think that it seemed not very objective.
And there, I think, is probably where we should end it, because, you know, we are somewhat subject matter experts in this, and this could lead to a very long debate.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it's a piece of filmmaking, and you know, the makers are entitled to their perspective. I think it's a stark reminder to me anytime I watch any kind of documentary about a topic on which I'm not educated. I see a lot of these things about the financial system, for example, and you know, they tend to be quite heavy-handed. And I'm sure the people who work on Wall Street aren't all sitting there clinking champagne glasses, rubbing their hands with glee, or are they?
Well, we just watched Wolf of Wall Street again, so yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's move along. So the next movie that we're going to talk about is one called Enhanced, another documentary.
Yes, so Enhanced is a documentary by ESPN with executive producer Stacey Offman, Richard Perrello, Libby Guest, and Connor Schnell. And it's directed by Alex Gibney. Hey, Alex Gibney, guys.
He didn't direct it, he executive produced it, I believe.
Okay. And essentially, the future of sports is changing. Teams and athletes at every level have begun to tap into the power of technology, chemistry, neurology, and artificial intelligence. We have entered a high-stakes, anything-goes arms race that takes place behind the scenes, just out of the view. Enhanced is a 6-part ESPN film documentary series that casts an unflinching spotlight on the secret world of modern sports.
So it was just the first episode that you got to watch?
It wasn't clear to me that it was actually a series. I mean, it felt very self-contained.
Oh, good. Maybe you saw all of them.
Well, they're all 1 hour each, and so this is just an hour. So it's you did probably watch
the first one.
No, you're right. Yeah, no, it was interesting because the credits kind of ran at the end of the segment. So, you know, the house lights came up, and I started walking out, and then it felt like the movie was looping over again. So you're right. It's probably the second part rather than some kind of truncated overview of the whole series.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, you know, it's amazing. All these documentaries have really provocative, you know, pieces. Like the whole idea of sport is to represent the purest of human physical abilities.
Or is it?
And if you start tampering with that, with technological assistance, etc., then what does it become? You are kind of sullying the pure human physical superior, you know, demonstration. So it's,
or is it the best you can get?
So yeah, it sounds like the pair of you actually watch this, because I think that's the question that the program actually leaves you with. I mean, you know, during its running time, I watched, you know, one episode. I don't know whether that was the first episode, but it felt like a broad introduction to this idea that we're meddling with sports right now. We're meddling with sports because of the availability, I guess, of computing power, computing technology. It was very famously done in Moneyball, where, you know, some baseball stats were kind of crunched to come up with an optimal team of players that could be bought for reasonable money, and that team, those teams started doing well. It explores some of the data that sports teams are now starting to keep about their athletes. So there's a story actually about the Houston Astros versus the Cardinals, where the Cardinals actually hacked into the database of the Houston Astros. It may be the other way around. Please don't sue us for libel. but one team hacked into another's database to get the detailed statistics about each of the strengths and weaknesses of the players, how each of those players are used. There are the game is being meddled with in the sense of there are some players who are particularly good at some points in the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are those players that are really only good when the win-lose scenario is on the line. And they come out. And so, you know, you take a look at that player and you think, right, now is the optimal time to deploy that particular talent because this is when they're going to do their best. They're looking at body measurements. So there was a discussion about doing all sorts of kind of biometrics on you know, the female soccer players are the ones that they talked about, where, you know, these players can have extraordinary amounts of data about how they sleep and what they eat and which muscle to train and how long to train each muscle until that muscle is sore. You know, and the players are putting all sorts of information into these things via apps. They're wearing biometric wearables and trackers, and so it's really capturing what we're doing right now is capturing a lot of analytics in order to try and get that edge to win. And I think, you know, I've always been fascinated about the kind of the quantified self, right? I love the idea of collecting metrics about my own body and how I might use that to, you know, lead a healthier life or something like that. In sports, it's getting very, very, very technical. They're watching these games, for example, basketball. They watch these players with six cameras around a court, and they look at the proportion of time each person spends in any one of these particular areas of the court, and who to play where, and which play, again, there was a basketball team where they had a tall player that you would think would be better in defense than a shorter player, but they learned over the course of time that the shorter player was actually better at, you know, in this particular role. So it's a very interesting exploration of that. I intend to catch this when it ultimately runs on TV. I think this is a really interesting topic. But the question that the two of you kind of raised at the beginning is, do we want that kind of edge in sports where ultimately we're trying to get to some level of perfection of the team, and ultimately will that change the very nature of the competition that we see between different sports teams? So, fascinating. Fascinating topic, and a really, really competently made documentary. Okay, so the next movie in the list that we have today is a movie called Egg. And Rashmi, you're going to tell us all about Egg.
Yeah, so This is directed by Mariana Palka. And the description is, in provocateur Mariana Palka's sharp and unflinching satire, two couples and a surrogate lay bare the complications, contradictions, heartbreak, and absurdities implicit in how we think about motherhood. And this has literally a five-person cast, which is headed by Christina Hendricks, Anna Camp, Elisa Reiner, who you would know from Orange is the New Black. That's where I know her from. David Alan Bash and Gbenga Akinabe. And I probably butchered that last name. So all three of us saw this one.
And the premise, Rashmi?
I read the description.
Oh, sorry, you did. Yeah, sorry. I tuned out for a second. I was trying to decipher my own notes here. Sorry about that. So
it's okay. We're like 13 movies in, Joe.
Yeah.
I forgive you. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
You would do that to me because
yeah, I was interested.
trying to understand what I wrote in the
dark. Yes,
no, okay. I got it. So this again, kind of like the movie that we described at the beginning, I think it started off a little hard to tune into what the movie was trying to be. I couldn't tell if it was comedic or serious. I think once it settled into its tone, it was a lot darker than I think it originally set out to be. As I was looking into this kind of offbeat, somewhat, I'm glad you used the word satire there, Rashmi, because I think some of the scenarios and setups here were kind of difficult to buy, right? This particular set of circumstances occurring in a two-hour period in somebody's apartment, and the number of issues that were brought to the table, the number of complex, deep life issues that all five of these characters were kind of encountering, felt somewhat forced to me. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I mean, I think if you accept it for what it is, which is, you know, a setup, I think it did provide for kind of an interesting exploration of a lot of kind of complex life issues, you know, people's feelings about whether or not they should have children, people's feelings about their relationships and what it is to be a woman today, and it just felt, you know, like a pressure cooker into which everything was thrown, and I think ultimately it left me somewhat confused as to its own point. You know, I don't know whether this is one of those movies where it just throws the questions out there for us to debate, or if it was trying to give me a specific message. So it was kind of messy for what it was, but I enjoyed the performances throughout, and kind of curious to what the two of you think about this.
Yes, Digo.
Yeah, so the movie this reminded me most of was a movie called Carnage, which came out 2-3 years ago. It was about these two couples who meet. It had who did it have? It had I'm blinking out on, I can see her face, Kate Winslet was in it. And Christoph Waltz was in it, and
I don't think I saw that. Carnage, Rashmi.
I can't remember it now.
Yeah, so it was just about and Jodie Foster was in it. Jodie Foster, Kate Winslet, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and who was the fourth person I mentioned?
Christoph Waltz.
So it was about these two couples who don't know each other, who are forced to meet each other in somewhat hostile environment, and the entire movie is about the four of them interacting with each other. In this particular movie, it's pretty much like a play
It is
completely written like a play with five characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, maybe I'm giving it more credit than it's due, or maybe it has been as skillfully created to make you feel that you know these characters, because a lot of them come off as very stereotypical archetypes. You know, the couple who are inviting the other two to their home, you know, they're left of left, you know, she's, you know, beyond feminist, you know, and he's like completely in touch with his femininity, and he's, you know, this touchy-feely husband, and then, you know, this other couple which comes, they're more traditional, and there's this clash on a variety of issues. But I think that almost lulls you into thinking that you're watching these archetypes when you find out as the movie goes on that they are a lot more complex.
Yes.
And each person has a lot of things that they're not being very honest about. And I really was even moved, not crying moved, but I was very moved from the inside about what price you have to pay for standing your ground and being different than what society expects of you. And there's a very strong indictment there in you know, how the movie plays out. And on the other hand, what price you have to pay for continuing to take part in society's traditions. And I'm looking at the Christina Hendricks character who, you know, she is that person and she too is paying a price. And I think it was kind of clever how that movie kind of, by kind of fooling you into thinking that these are stereotypical characters, kind of brings you to that point. And the dialogue is really very good. Some of the stuff which is said and done really begs for incredibility. I mean, some of the stuff I was like, really, nobody does that. Nobody says that.
It's but the kind of thing that you might believe could happen over a longer time frame, but the movie's intent to kind of juxtapose those things.
Right.
It's a setup.
It's a setup. But I really,
yeah.
And then we're probably going to talk about this, but then Anna Camp shows up in the third act. Completely, I would think, completely miscast, but she just completely steals the movie.
Yeah.
You know, I would not have thought of Anna Camp for that role, but she just inhabits it and just by virtue of force just completely steals the movie, and she's brilliant. So I really had a great time with this one.
I'd like to get a female perspective on this, Rashmi. I knew it.
I don't disagree with anything the two of you said, but
here it comes.
And I'll tell you the things I really liked about the movie first. I like that we start, there's these three chapters. It starts with Tina, mm-hmm. then it says Tina and Karen, and then it says Tina, Karen, and Kiki, right? So I like how it builds these, builds on the females. And essentially, you know, the males are really the supporting characters. I think this is superbly acted by all the people in the movie. And I think if we were watching this as a stage play, we would be like jumping out of our seats. Mm-hmm. And bravoing this. Here's the piece that really got under my skin. I don't disagree with anything you've said, and I did really enjoy it, but the end really spoiled it for me, because I wish they had been brave enough to not endow, and I don't want to give anything away, not endow that character, that final scene. I wish things had turned out a little bit differently, because it almost penalized that person for the decision she made. Mm-hmm. And I wish, given they've been so brave at...
So the epilogue you kind of had a problem with.
Total problem with. But I also felt that the final end, how that character ends up, I wish they'd been brave enough to have a different ending. Because in the end, the message was, well, if you don't do this, then this is what happens. That really it is what society thinks you should do. And that really upset me. Like that piece, I feel like it was a cop-out. But up until that point, it was I had it all the way. And I think that the change in the female's relationship when the men leave the room, and the things that women talk about, and how women think of themselves, and the problems that these slightly older women have with the younger woman, and the naivety of the younger woman, all those things were perfectly captured, and again, superbly acted. So I think, again, I know we're not scoring the movie, but this for me would have been a B+ all of the way through, and then the end killed it, and I drop it down to a C-.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I you know.
Do you understand what I'm saying, though? Yeah, I wish that they had really had
so the you're, gumption you're to say. You're saying that the feminist streak was kind of lost towards the end. Because, I mean, I think you're talking about what was, you know, very independently minded feminist.
Yeah.
Strong female character.
Yeah.
Ultimately, through her choices.
Yeah, like, well, was, yeah.
No, that's kind of an interesting perspective. Because, yeah, as a man, I didn't feel that at all. I mean, I think the epilogue was somewhat unnecessary. I think the movie would have ended beautifully if it hadn't gone to the 1 year later type moment. But It didn't ruin the movie for me in any way.
Yeah, I just feel like they really copped out at the end.
For me, it kind of gave it heft. It was very bitter for me. It did feel like the movie had kind of pulled the rug from underneath its position.
Right.
But
it was almost a 180.
But I think it was a 180. But I think it was intentional. It was saying, "Well, look, this is what happens. This is how society treats you."
But that, again,
which is a very pessimistic view to take.
Yeah. But possibly truthful, and I think that's the director's intent, right? That the truth of that situation, as painful as it is probably the reality of that character's world, right?
Yeah.
As painful as that is, right? You build up a character to be strong, but then to Yazdi's point, society is what it is, and this is the world in which we inhabit.
Yeah.
I was also, just to go off topic for a second, I was surprised that three out of the four movies that I saw today were directed by women.
So, and I love that they've a lot of relationship movies.
A lot of relationships,
I think, predominantly, as we look at all the movies we've watched so far, a lot of them have been about the modern day relationship.
Which is something good. Is in the air.
Yes. That's probably a good segue to the next movie, right?
Which would be
Nigerian Prince.
Oh, I thought we were doing Untogether. Yeah.
But we can do that afterwards. Let's do Nigerian
Prince. Let's do Nigerian Prince.
Okay, Rashmi, you're going to tell us a little bit about this one.
I am. Although I'm scrambling on my phone, trying to find information.
Well, while you do that, I'm kind of curious. Here in the description, they describe the language as English and Pidgin English with subtitles.
That was funny.
Which is absolutely true, but I've rarely seen English or any language described as Pidgin English with subtitles.
So, Nigerian Prince, I was actually really excited to see this one because our very own Joe is a Ghanaian prince of sorts. Yes. So I was really...
to be confused with Nigeria under any circumstances.
Correct.
Even though they are co-located in West Africa.
They are all West African. So this is directed by Faraday Okoro. Produced by Spike Lee. Basically, a troubled American teenager sent away to his mother's native Nigeria finds himself entangled in a dangerous web of scams and corruption with a con artist cousin as his guide. Has a whole host of people in it. But guys, what did you think? Yazdi, as the one of us that hasn't been to West Africa.
I liked the air of this movie. I liked that you feel like you're in Nigeria. It really feels like you're transported to that particular place. And I don't know how much of a homegrown effort this film is. But everything about it felt like I was with these people. I was breathing what they were breathing. And I think it's a topic which is very close to my heart because I was born and brought up in India, and then I immigrated to the United States for my graduate studies. And, two decades later, I think of myself, and I am a U.S. citizen, but I think of myself more as American than Indian. So I think those of us who have to kind of do this bridge between, one culture to another culture, kind of you neither belong here nor there, and you will never be a fully formed version of either shores. And this movie deals with a kid who is of Nigerian descent. His parents are Nigerian, but he's grown up in the United States, and his mother deceives him into going to Nigeria over the summer for just a couple of weeks with full intention of actually having him stay longer. And most of the movie is seen through the eye of this kid who is clearly brought up in the US and has to deal with what's going on in Nigeria. And in a way, this kid becomes a really good surrogate for the audience member because, we are watching Nigeria from that perspective as well. And so I really enjoyed that piece. It was something which resonated for me. It felt truthful. Everything about a new place with different rules, with, how you eat and how you don't take electricity for granted, and all of that stuff really rung true for me. His aunt in whose house he lives, who refuses to treat him with, any mollycoddling and is kind of pretty firm with him, which he's not used to. All of this was beautiful, and I wish the movie had been more about you know, you take somebody who's been uprooted from their culture of birth and put them back into that culture, and how do they react to it? And curiously, the movie kind of, in the second half, chooses to kind of spend a lot of its time in this crime direction. You know, this whole, there's this whole other backstory about crime and corrupt police officers, and he has a half-brother, you know, his aunt's son, who is into all kinds of corruption, and it becomes kind of a story about the Nigerian prince that we know through social media, about the person who, you know, people are constantly trying to scam you out of your money. So I don't know. I would have personally preferred, if it seemed a little schizophrenic to me, I would have personally preferred if the movie was not about the crime element and more about this kid fitting in. But I must also admit that this was my fourth movie of the day, and I haven't had much sleep in the last 3-4 days. So I had difficulty keeping my eyes open. Through no problem with the movie itself. I it was my last movie of the day, and I was very exhausted. So Prince keep that Joe. In mind. Yes.
Tell us.
Prince of Ghana, tell us.
Yes.
Well, right. I mean, I think I agree with many of the points you said there, Yazdi. You know, right off the bat, I'm going to say that I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. It meandered, and I think it suffered to some extent for the choices that were made, as you alluded to, by focusing on two characters. Because I think if it had been through the eyes of one or the other, we would have made, you know, we would have had maybe more of a coherent experience, and there were multiple stories that were being told here, which meant the movie meandered a little bit. But nonetheless, that didn't, you know, I stayed with it despite that, and I think the culture shock elements were done tremendously well, and they're not unlike experiences that I had during my first trip to Africa as you know, kind of a young late teen / 20 something. You know, when my father took me home to Ghana for the very first time, and many of the experiences I had, fortunately, not the crime element, but certainly the understanding that, you know, the rules are different in West Africa, the air is different, the people are different, the way that things operate and the culture and the people, the way that people treat you, can be very different to what you have having grown up in more of a Western culture. So I think it did do the culture shock thing very well. I do feel it's kind of a shame that it focused so heavily on the criminal aspects, because we hear so much about Nigeria and the criminality and this idea of the Nigerian scam. And, you know, look, this is a choice that the writers and the directors have made, and this is the story that they wanted to tell. But like you, I feel like there are many positive aspects of that society. You know, based on my own experience, Ghana and Nigeria are very different countries and cultures, but you know, there is a joy to being in West Africa that was not captured here, you know, because they were focusing very heavily on really, you know, the struggle and the choices that, you know, one particular character had to put food on the table. You know, this is a real thing out there in West Africa. You know, I've seen stories like this before, and yeah, just took away a little bit of the tone, but overall this movie had me with it all the way. You know, I enjoyed every moment of it, and again, the story that I would have wanted to see was not necessarily the story that they were telling me, but it was terrific regardless.
Yeah, again, I don't disagree with anything the two of you said. I really loved this movie. It reminded me in tone at the beginning of the Women's Detective Agency. Remember that?
The number one lovely, ladies, the detective, number one agency. Ladies
detective agency. The one that was set in Botswana. It kind of felt like that to start with. And then it changed in tone. And again, I too agree that I wish it had stayed with either one story or the other. And in fact, I didn't even think it needed the American boy coming over. I think the story about the Nigerian prince himself would have been very entertaining. And it changed tonally, because it was funny to start with.
It was
with
two films in one.
Yeah, it was kind of funny to start with, and almost the scams were comical, and then they turned very sinister, and I didn't like that. But I did feel like we were on vacation with them, and it did capture that West African-ness, and I wanted to spend more time in the market and with the food and the culture and the hospitality and how wonderful it can be, and I wish that we had seen those parts. So it was very much concentrating on this kind of working class in Nigeria, and I wish it had concentrated, if it's anything like Ghana, on the other side that we had such a great experience with when we went.
Well, we should make our own movie if that's
yeah,
what.
I guess we should. Yeah.
Let's stick but to this one.
Again, look, I think this was really well acted. I mean, it didn't feel like there were any big names in this movie, but it had a great message as well. I love the whole thing about, you know, this mother in America who decides that her son needs to figure out who he is. And I wish that, again, the maybe this would be a great TV series.
Yeah.
Right, this would be a great TV series.
There's a lot of material here.
Yeah, like I wanted to see him at school. I was thinking, oh, this is great. Like, he's going to finally sort of enjoy being there and the trials and tribulations and figure out what is so great about West Africa.
Right.
And we never got there. We never really got to that bit. So it also felt to me, I don't know if this was the same for you, it felt like a really, really, really long film. It was a very slow burn. And I'm almost wondering whether there was more that was left out of the movie that maybe they shot, but there was so much that they had to condense it, and that's what they could come to. But it felt like a really long movie. It's an hour and about 40 minutes. It felt like we were there for about 4 hours.
In a good way.
In a good way.
Just to clarify
like it
that.
Really unraveled very slowly.
Yeah, I felt like we'd been on a journey.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, good movie. I would recommend this. Just temper your expectations.
I would say keep those expectations high. I think this movie delivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unlike anything I've seen, for sure. You know? I haven't seen a movie set in Nigeria, and kind of comments it's topical about what's going on with scamming and, you know, so forth.
And the scams were really funny, some of them.
Yes, they were.
All right, let's move on to our final movie of the day, which is Untogether. And I'll give a quick intro on this. So this movie is written and directed by Emma Forrest, starring Jamie Dornan, Jemima Kirk, Lola Kirk, Ben Mendelsohn, Billy Crystal, Alice Eve, Jennifer Grey, and Scott Kahn. That's a terrific cast.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that this movie on the description had so many people in it. So premise here is that Andrea is a recently sober writer whose career has stalled since she published her debut novel several years ago. She strikes up an affair with Nick, a doctor turned writer who is hailed for his wartime memoir. At the same time, her sister Tara, a massage therapist dating an aging rock star, finds herself inexorably drawn to a newfound religious zeal and particularly to a politically engaged rabbi. So, guys, what did you make of the movie Untogether?
Okay, so first thing, Yazdi, Jemima Kirk and Lola Kirk are sisters.
Oh, good.
You can tell by the name Kirk.
No, but they don't.
I'm kidding.
They don't, because isn't Jemima Kirk on Girls?
Yes, that's where she started.
Because she plays a British accent.
Correct.
She's a British, but she's not
British. They're all
British.
They're all born in England and then they've grown up in New York.
Okay, so
again, you know, this is probably like the third or fourth relationship movie now that we've come across. But and I was thinking, oh no, Jamie Dornan, first scene, nakedness, has the guy been typecast?
50 Shades of.
Yeah. Is this like, you know, 50 Shades of Light Grey? But I'm really happy to say I really like this movie. Again, it's overcooked. It's implausible. But there's a sweetness and an earnestness about it that really kept me. And I was invested in these characters, and I wanted to see where they'll all end up. It's really well cast. It's well acted, well cast, well directed. I wish, again, a little bit of restraint. These are all movies that are good, but they just cross the line a little bit. I really enjoyed it, though.
Yes, Dee?
I don't know, this, you know, it, brilliant cast, you know, great cast, Jemima Kirk, Lola Kirk, Ben
Mendelsohn. They're great, what a lot of talent in one family.
Yeah, Ben Mendelsohn, you know, he's been in so many movies of late, he's the bad guy in Ready Player One.
Yes, doing a great Australian accent.
Doing a great Australian accent, Jamie Dornan is here, Billy Crystal is here, Jennifer Grey is here, Alice Eve is here, this is a great cast. Ultimately, the movie felt a little pointless to me. I mean, it, and maybe I just never calibrated to the rhythms of the movie. This is directed by Emma Forrest, so again, another female written and director movie.
First time
director. Yep. And it kind of circles around these four characters, right? The two sisters and their love interests. And while the dialogue rings with, you know, insight and occasionally is funny and so forth, it just felt kind of purposeless, which is okay. You're just following them around. But it, I don't know, it never really amounted to anything. It felt like, you know, when you're writing a script, some people write it from the perspective of the conflict, that here is the conflict, and then I'm going to generate characters who will be engaged in that conflict, and that's how you can develop a plot. The other way, which is the more pure way, is that you create characters, and you say, if I put a person like this with a person like that, what's going to happen? So I think it's the latter approach which is used here. These are very well, nicely rounded characters. They all have their own personalities and peculiarities.
They seem authentic.
Right? Lola Kirk is in this trip to be dressed like in the 60s, very anachronistically, and she's very stylish. Her younger sister has this funny, you know, haircut, and she's kind of into an older guy. But when you put all these characters together, sometimes it seems like nothing much was happening. And again, I have no problems where movies don't happen, but it all just seemed not to add up to too much for me. And also, it's very curious because all the relationships in these movie, in this movie, kind of, you know, in this post Me Too generation, they kind of don't come out looking very good, you know. I mean, here is the younger sister kind of, you know, going after this married rabbi, and you know the younger sister is after this. Sorry, the older sister is after this much older guy, you know, who's a rock singer. I don't know. There's something about that about their pursuit of men seemed to me a little turned around. They were seeking almost from the men. They were kind of seeking some kind of fatherly.
Correct.
Validation, almost.
There was a daddy complex, and I think it's alluded to in the story.
Yeah.
So I could buy it. I don't. Again, yes, I don't disagree with you, but you know how some films are just about. Yeah, they're just about. This is not dissimilar in some ways to In a Relationship, or you know, it's just we're observing people's sure. relationships. But it seemed very endearing to me. Like I could believe all of those characters. Of course, they're extreme versions of themselves.
Right.
I could have done without the Billy Crystal story, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It was a bit, again, that's what I'm saying. It was a little bit overcooked.
I think there's a theme that we keep kind of coming back to here, which is, you know, the early career writer directors tend
try and
to
put too much in
show everything that they can do yeah. with characters in a short period of time, lest they not be selected for sure. to make another film, and it ends up with a slightly, you know, it's one too many ingredients in the
yeah.
soup.
Yeah, but it's very competently made. Right, yeah. This is a first time.
Yeah. I can't.
I mean, it's very competently made. It's very glossy. It feels very complete. I put, you know, some bits of it were predictable, but then I didn't know where it was going to go. I kind of like where it ended up.
Yeah.
And empowered females, regardless of what they're doing, the women are in control.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah.
What okay. great movies. I mean, now we're talking about them. We've been literally running from screen to screen to screen. It's hard to take stock of how much great material we've all watched.
It's been out there, yeah.
Absolutely.
So again, you know, just to wrap things up, we've covered, I think, 13 movies in these first couple of days of Tribeca. And, you know, it's the beauty of film festivals. You know, get yourself out to them. If you can't quite dedicate, you know, the chunks of your day that, you know, we do when we come here, do just try and catch, you know, the movies that there's buzz around, and heck, just pick something at random, go see it, because we almost went into all of these movies without any knowledge, and yeah. I don't think we were disappointed in any way by anything we saw today. So
absolutely,
film festivals are awesome, and Tribeca is in particular one of our favorites in terms of the curation that goes into making the selections for the festival. So,
and there's so much more to come.
Indeed, there is. Two more podcasts, at least from us, and we'll try and keep up daily. So I hope you're enjoying the podcast. Let us know if you do. And until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.